minus 30 and counting. It was McCone who broke the deadlock first. He threw back his head and laughed. It was a very cultured laugh, soft and velvet.
Oh, you are so good, Mr. Richards. Par excellence. Raise, call, and raise again. I salute you with honesty.
The woman is not broken. She maintains stubbornly that the bulge I see in your pocket there is Black Irish. We can't SAP her because it leaves a definable trace. A single EEG on the woman and our secret would be out. We are in the process of lifting in 3 ampules of Canogen from New York. Leaves no trace. We expect it in 40 minutes. Not in time to stop you, alas. She is lying. It's obvious. If you will pardon a touch of what your fellows like to call elitism, I will offer my observation that the middle class lies well only about sex. May I offer another observation? Of course I may. I am.
McCone smiled.
I suspect it's her handbag. We noticed she had none, although she had been shopping. We're quite observant. What happened to her purse, if it isn't in your pocket, Richards?
He would not pick up the gambit. Shoot me, if you are so sure.
McCone spread his hands sorrowfully. How well I'd love to. But one does not take chances with human life, not even when the odds are 50-1 in your favor. Too much like Russian roulette. Human life has a certain sacred quality. The government, our government, realizes this. We are humane.
Yes, yes, Richard said, and smiled ferally.
McCone blinked. So you see.
Richard started. The man was hypnotizing him. The minutes were flying. A helicopter was coming up from Boston, loaded with 3 ampules of jack me up and turn me over, and if McCone said 40 minutes, he meant 20. And here he stood, listening to this man's tinkling little anthem. God, he was a monster.
Listen to me,
Richard said harshly, interrupting. The speech is short, little man. When you inject her, she's going to sing the same tune. For the record, it's all here. Dig? He locked his gaze with McCone's and began to walk forward.
I'll see you, shit-eater.
McCone stepped aside. Richards didn't even bother to look at him as he passed. Their coat sleeves brushed.
For the record, I was told the pull on half-cock was about 3 pounds. I've got about 2.5 on now, give or take.
He had the satisfaction of hearing the man's breath whistle a little faster.
Richards.
He looked back from the stairs, and McCone was looking up at him, the gold edges of his glasses gleaming and flashing.
When you get in the air, we're going to shoot you down with a ground-to-air missile. The story for the public will be that Richards got a little itchy on the trigger. Rest in peace.
You won't, though.
No?
Richards began to smile and gave half a reason.
We're going to be very low and over heavily populated areas. Add 12 fuel pods to 12 pounds of Irish, and you got a very big bang potential. Too big. You'd do it if you could get away with it. But you can't.
He paused.
You're so bright. Did you anticipate me on the parachute?
Oh, yes,
McCone said calmly.
It's in the forward passenger compartment. Such old hat, Mr. Richards. Or do you have another trick in your bag? You haven't been stupid enough to tamper with the chute either, I'll bet.
Oh, no. Too obvious. And you would pull that non-existent imploder ring just before you struck, I imagine. Quite an effective airburst.
Goodbye, little man.
Goodbye, Mr. Richards. And bon voyage,
he chuckled.
Yes, you do rate honesty. So I will show you one more card, just one. We're going to wait for the Canogen before taking action. You were absolutely right about the missile. For now, just a bluff. Call and raise again, eh? But I can afford to wait. You see, I am never wrong. Never. And I know you are bluffing. So we can afford to wait. But I'm keeping you. Voir, Mr. Richards. He waved.
Soon, Richards said, but not loud enough for McCone to hear, and he grinned. -29 and counting. The first-class compartment was long and three aisles wide, paneled with real aged sequoia. A wine-colored rug, which felt yards deep, covered the floor. A 3D movie screen was cranked up and out of the way on the far wall between the first class and the galley. In seat 100, the bulky parachute pack sat. Richards patted it briefly and went through the galley. Someone had even put coffee on. He stepped through another door and stood in a short throat which led to the pilot's compartment. To the right, the radio operator, a man of perhaps 30 with a care-lined face, looked at Richards bitterly and then back at his instruments. A few steps up and to the left, the navigator sat at his boards and grids and plastic-encased charts.
"The fella's going to get us all killed is coming up, fellas," he said in his throat mic.
He gazed coolly at Richards. Richards said nothing. The man, after all, was almost certainly right. He limped into the nose of the plane. The pilot was 50 or better, an old war horse with the red nose of a steady drinker, and the clear, perceptive eyes of a man who was not even close to the alcoholic edge. His co-pilot was 10 years younger, with a luxuriant growth of red hair spilling out from under his cap.
"Hello, Mr. Richards,"
the pilot said. He glanced at the bulge in Richards' pocket before he looked at his face.
"Pardon me if I don't shake hands. I'm Flight Captain Don Holloway. This is my co-pilot, Wayne Dunninger. Under the circumstances, not very pleased to meet you,"
Dunninger said. Richard's mouth quirked.
"In the same spirit, let me add that I'm sorry to be here. Captain Holloway, you're patched in two communications with McCone, aren't you?"
"We sure are. Through Kippy Freeman, our communications man."
"Give me something to talk into."
Holloway handed him a microphone with infinite carefulness.
"Get going on your pre-flight," Richard said. 5 minutes.
"Will you want the explosive bolts on the rear loading door armed?"
Dunninger said, with great eagerness. "Tend your knitting," Richard said coldly. It was time to finish it off, make the final bet. His brain felt hot, overheated, on the verge of blowing a bearing. Call and raise. That was the game. "I'm going to sky's the limit right now, McCone."
"Mr. Freeman?"
"Yes?"
"This is Richards. I want to talk to McCone."
Dead air for half a minute. Holloway and Dunninger weren't watching him anymore. They were going through pre-flight, reading gauges and pressures, checking flaps, doors, switches. The rising and falling of the huge GA turbines began again, but now much louder, strident. When McCone's voice finally came, it was small against the brute noise.
"McCone here."
"Come on, maggot. You and the woman are going for a ride. Show up at the loading door in 3 minutes or I pull the ring."
Dunninger stiffened in his bucket seat as if he'd been shot. When he went back to his numbers, his voice was shaken and terrified. If he's got guts, this is where he calls. Asking for the woman gives it away. If he's got guts. Richards waited. A clock was ticking in his head. -28 and counting. When McCone's voice came, it contained a foreign, blustery note. Fear? Possibly. Richard's heart lurched in his chest. Maybe it was all going to fall together. Maybe.
"You're nuts, Richard. I'm not."
"You listen,"
Richard said, punching through McCone's voice.
"And while you are, remember that this conversation is being party-lined by every ham operator within 60 miles. The word is going to get around. You're not working in the dark, little man. You're right out on the big stage. You're coming because you're too chicken shit to pull a double cross when you know it will get you dead. The woman's coming because I told her where I was going."
"Weak. Punch him harder. Don't let him think."
"Even if you should live when I pull the ring, you won't be able to get a job selling apples."
He was clutching the handbag in his pocket with frantic, maniacal tightness.
So that's it. 3 minutes. Signing off.
Richards, wait.
He signed off, choking McCone's voice. He handed the mic back to Holloway, and Holloway took it with fingers that trembled only slightly.
You've got guts,
Holloway said slowly.
I'll say that. I don't think I ever saw so much guts.
There'll be more guts than anyone ever saw if he pulls that ring,
Dunninger said. Continue with your pre-flight, please, Richard said. I'm going back to welcome our guests.
We go in 5 minutes.
He went back and pushed the chute over to the window seat, then sat down watching the door between first class and second class. He would know very soon. He would know very soon. His hand worked with steady, helpless restlessness on Amelia Williams' handbag. Outside, it was almost full dark. -27 and counting. They came up the stairs with a full 45 seconds to spare. Amelia was panting and frightened, her hair blown into a haphazard beehive by the steady wind that rolled this man-made flatland. McCone's appearance was outwardly unchanged. He remained neat and unaffected, unruffled, you might say, but his eyes were dark with a hate that was nearly psychotic.
You haven't won a thing, maggot,
he said quietly.
We haven't even started to play our trump cards yet.
It's nice to see you again, Mrs. Williams,
Richard said mildly. As if he had given her a signal, pulled an invisible string, she began to weep. It was not a hysterical weeping. It was an entirely hopeless sound that came from her belly like hunks of slag. The force of it made her stagger, then crumple to the plush carpet of this plush first-class section with her face cupped in her hands, as if to hold it on. Richard's blood had dried to a tacky maroon smear on her blouse. Her full skirt, spread around her and hiding her legs, made her look like a wilted flower. Richards felt sorry for her. It was a shallow emotion, feeling sorry, but the best he could manage.
Mr. Richards?
It was Holloway's voice over the cabin intercom.
Yes? Are we green? Yes. Then I'm giving the service crew the order to remove the stairs and seal us up. Don't get nervous with that thing. All right, Captain. Thank you.
You gave yourself away when you asked for the woman. You know that, don't you?
McCone seemed to be smiling and scowling at the same time. The overall effect was frighteningly paranoid. His hands were clenching and unclenching.
Ah, so,
Richard said mildly.
And since you're never wrong, you'll undoubtedly jump me before we take off. That way you'll be out of jeopardy and come up smelling like a rose, right?
McCone's lips parted in a tiny snarl and then pressed together until they went white. He made no move. The plane began to pick up a tiny vibration as the engine cycled higher and higher. The noise was suddenly muted as the boarding door in second class was slammed shut. Leaning over slightly to peer out one of the circular windows on the port side, Richards could see the crew trundling away the stairs. Now we're all on the scaffold, he thought. -26 and counting. The fastened seatbelt's no smoking sign to the right of the trundled up movie screen flashed on. The airplane began a slow, ponderous turn beneath them. Richards had gained all his knowledge of jets from the freebie and from reading, much of it lurid adventure fiction, but this was only the second time he'd ever been on one, and it made the shuttle from Harding to New York look like a bathtub toy. He found the huge motion beneath his feet disturbing.
Amelia?
She looked up slowly, her face ravaged and tear-streaked. Her voice was rusty, dazed, mucus-clogged, as if she had forgotten where she was.
Come forward. We're taking off.
He looked at McCone.
You go wherever you please, little man. You have the run of the ship. Just don't bother the crew.
McCone said nothing, and sat down near the curtained divider between first and second class. Then, apparently thinking better of it, he pushed through into the next section and was gone. Richards walked to the woman, using the high backs of the seats for support. "I'd like the window seat," he said. "I've only flown once before." He tried to smile, but she only looked at him dumbly. He slid in, and she sat next to him. She buckled his belt for him, so his hand did not have to come out of his pocket. "You're like a bad dream," she said. "One that never ends." "I'm sorry." "I didn't," she began, and he clamped a hand over her mouth and shook his head. He mouthed the word no at her eyes. The plane swung around with slow, infinite care, turbines screaming, and began to trundle toward the runways like an ungainly duck about to enter the water. It was so big that Richards felt as if the plane were standing still and the earth itself was moving. "Maybe it's all illusion," he thought wildly. "Maybe they've rigged 3D projectors outside all the windows and..." He cut the thought off. Now they had reached the end of the taxiway, and the plane made a cumbersome right turn. They ran at right angles to the runways, passing 3 and 2. At 1, they turned left and paused for a second. Over the intercom, Holloway said expressionlessly, "Taken off, Mr. Richards." The plane began to move slowly at first, at no more than air car speed, and then there was a sudden, terrifying burst of acceleration that made Richards want to scream aloud in terror. He was driven back into the soft pile of his seat, and the landing lights outside suddenly began to leap by with dizzying speed. The scrub bushes and exhaust-stunted trees on the desolate, sunset-riven horizon roared toward them. The engines wound up and up and up. The floor began to vibrate again. He suddenly realized that Amelia Williams was holding onto his shoulder with both hands, her face twisted into a miserable grimace of fear. Dear God, she's never flown either. "We're going," he said. He found himself repeating it over and over and over, unable to stop. "We're going. We're going."
"Where?"
she whispered. He didn't answer. He was just beginning to know. -25 and counting. The two troopers on roadblock duty at the eastern entrance of the jetport watched the huge liner fling itself down the runway, gaining speed. Its lights blinked orange and green in the growing dark, and the howl of its engines buffeted their ears.
"He's going. Christ, he's going."
"Where?"
said the other. They watched the dark shape as it separated from the ground. Its engines took on a curiously flat sound, like artillery practice on a cold morning. It rose at a steep angle, as real and as tangible and as prosaic as a cube of butter on a plate, yet improbable with flight.
"You think he's got it?"
"Hell, I don't know."
The roar of the jet was now coming to them in falling cycles.
"I'll tell you one thing, though."
The first turned from the diminishing lights and turned up his collar.
"I'm glad he's got that bastard with him, that McCone.
Can I ask you a personal question?
As long as I don't have to answer it."
"Would you like to see him pull it off?"
The trooper said nothing for a long time. The sound of the jet faded, 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 until it disappeared into the underground hum of nerves at work.
"Yes."
"Do you think he will?"
A crescent smile in the darkness.
"My friend, I think there's going to be a big boom."
-24 and counting. The earth had dropped away below them. Richard stared out wonderingly, unable to drink his fill. He'd slept through the other flight, as if in wait for this one. The sky had deepened to a shade that hung on the borderline between royal velvet and black. Stars poked through the hesitant brilliance. On the western horizon, the only remnant of the sun was a bitter orange line that illuminated the dark earth below not at all. There was a nestle of lights below he took to be dairy.
"Mr. Richards?"
"Yes."
He jumped in his seat as if he'd been poked.
We're holding in a pattern right now. That means we're describing a large circle above the void jet port. Instructions?
Richards thought carefully. It wouldn't do to give too much away.
What's the absolute lowest you can fly this thing?
There was a long pause for consultation.
We could get away with 2,000 feet,
Holloway said cautiously.
It's against NSA's regs, but never mind that, Richards said. I have to put myself in your hands to a certain extent, Mr. Holloway. I know very little of flying, and I'm sure you've been briefed on that, but please remember that the people who are full of bright ideas about how to bamboozle me are all on the ground and out of danger. If you lie to me about anything, and I find out, nobody up here is going to do any lying, Holloway said. We're only interested in getting this thing back down the way it went up.
Okay.
Good.
He gave himself time to think. Amelia Williams sat rigidly beside him, her hands folded in her lap.
Go due west, he said abruptly. 2,000 feet. Point out the sights as we go along, please. The sights? What we're going over, Richard said. I've only flown once before. Oh.
Holloway sounded relieved. The plane banked beneath their feet, and the dark sunset line outside the window tilted on its ear. Richards watched, fascinated. Now it gleamed aslant the thick window, making odd, fugitive sungleams just beyond the glass. We're chasing the sun, he thought.
Isn't that amazing?
It was 6:35. -23, and counting. The back of the seat in front of Richards was a revelation in itself. There was a pocket with a safety handbook in it. In case of air turbulence, fasten your belt. If the cabin loses pressure, pull down the air mask directly over your head. In case of engine trouble, the stewardess will give you further instructions. In case of sudden explosive death, hope you have enough dental fillings to ensure identification. There was a small freebie set into the seat panel at eye level. A metal card below it reminded the viewer that channels would come and go with a fair degree of speed. A touch control channel selector was provided for the hungry viewer. Below and to the right of the freebie was a pad of airline stationery and a GA stylus on a chain. Richards pulled out a sheet and wrote clumsily on his knee. Odds are 99 out of 100 that you're bugged. Shoe mic or hair mic, maybe mesh transmitter on your sleeve. McCone listening and waiting for you to drop the other shoe, I bet. In a minute, have a hysterical outburst and beg me not to pull the ring. It'll make our chances better. You game? She nodded, and Richards hesitated, then wrote again. Why did you lie about it? She plucked the stylus out of his hand and held it over the paper on his knee for a moment, and then wrote, Don't know. You made me feel like a murderer. Wife. And you seem so. The stylus paused, wavered, and then scrawled. Pitiful. Richards raised his eyebrows and grinned a little. It hurt. He offered her the stylus, but she shook her head mutely. He wrote, Go into your act in about 5 minutes. She nodded, and Richards crumpled the paper and stuffed it into the ashtray and bedded in the armrest. He lit the paper. It puffed into flame and blazed brightly for a moment, kindling a tiny reflective glow in the window. Then it collapsed into ashes, which Richards poked thoughtfully. About 5 minutes later, Amelia Williams began to moan. It sounded so real that for a moment, Richards was startled. Then it flashed across his mind that it probably was real.
Please don't, she said. Please don't make that man have to try you. I never did anything to you. I want to go home to my husband. We have a daughter, too. She's 6. She'll wonder where her mommy is.
Richards felt his eyebrow rise and fall twice in an involuntary tick. He didn't want her to be that good. Not that good.
He's dumb, he told her, trying not to speak for an unseen audience, but I don't think he's that dumb.
It will be all right, Mrs. Williams.
That's easy for you to say. You've got nothing to lose.
He didn't answer her. She was so patently right. Nothing, anyway, that he hadn't lost already.
Show it to him, she pleaded. For God's sake, why don't you show it to him? Then he'd have to believe you. Call off the people on the ground. They're tracking us with missiles. I heard him say so.
I can't show him, Richard said. To take it out of my pocket would mean putting the ring on safety or taking the full risk of blowing us up accidentally. Besides, he added, injecting mockery into his voice, I don't think I'd show him if I could. He's the maggot with something to lose. Let him sweat it.
I don't think I can stand it, she said dully. I almost think I'd rather joggle you and have it over. That's the way it's going to end anyway, isn't it?
You haven't, he began, and then the door between first and second was snapped open, and McCone half strode, half lunged through. His face was calm, but beneath the calm was an odd, sheeny look, which Richards recognized immediately. The sheen of fear, white and waxy and glowing.
Mrs. Williams, he said briskly, coffee, if you please, for seven. You'll have to play stewardess on this flight, I'm afraid.
She got up without looking at either of them.
Where?
Forward,
McCone said smoothly.
Just follow your nose.
He was a mild, blinking sort of man, and ready to lunge at Amelia Williams the moment she showed a sign of going for Richards. She made her way up the aisle without looking back. McCone stared at Richards and said,
Would you give us up if I could promise you amnesty, pal?
Pal?
That word sounds really greasy in your mouth, Richards marveled.
He flexed his free hand, looked at it. The hand was caked with small runnels of dried blood, dotted with tiny scrapes and scratches from his broken ankle hike through the southern Maine woods.
Really greasy. You make it sound like 2 pounds of fatty hamburger cooking in the pan, the only kind you can get at the welfare stores in Co-op City.
He looked at McCone's well-concealed pot.
That now? That looks more like a steak gut. Prime cut. No fat on prime cut except that crinkly little ring around the outside, right? Amnesty,
McCone repeated.
How does that word sound?
Like a lie, Richard said, smiling.
Like a fat fucking lie. Don't you think I know you're nothing but the hired help?
McCone flushed. It was not a soft flush at all. It was hard and red and brick-like.
It's going to be good to have you on my home court, he said. We've got high-impact slugs that will make your head look like a pumpkin dropped on a sidewalk from the top floor of a skyscraper. Gas-filled. They explode on contact. A gut shot, on the other hand. Richard screamed, Here it goes! I'm pulling the ring!
McCone screeched. He staggered back 2 steps. His rump hit the well-padded arm of seat number 95 across the way. He overbalanced and fell into it like a man into a sling, his arms flailing the air around his head in crazed warding off gestures. His hands froze about his head like petrified birds, splay-fingered. His face stared through their grotesque frame like a plaster death mask, on which someone had hung a pair of gold-rimmed spectacles for a joke. Richards began to laugh. The noise of it was cracked at first, hesitant, foreign to his own ears. How long had it been since he had had a real laugh? An honest one, the kind that comes freely and helplessly from the deepest root of the stomach. It seemed to him that he had never had one in his whole gray, struggling, earnest life. But he was having one now.
You bastard.
McCone's voice had failed him. He could only mouth the words. His face was twisted and scrunched like the face of a badly used teddy bear. Richards laughed. He held onto one arm of his seat with his free hand and just laughed and laughed and laughed. -22 and counting. When Holloway's voice informed Richards that the plane was crossing the border between Canada and the state of Vermont, where Richards supposed he knew his business, he himself could see nothing but darkness below them, interrupted by occasional clusters of light, he set his coffee down, carefully, and said,
Could you supply me with a map of North America, Captain Holloway? Physical or political?
a new voice cut in. The navigators, Richard supposed. Now he was supposed to play obligingly dumb and not know which map he wanted, which he didn't.
Both, he said flatly. Are you going to send the woman up for them? What's your name, pal?
The hesitant pause of a man who realizes with sudden trepidation that he's been singled out.
Donahue. You got legs, Donahue. Suppose you trot them back here yourself.
Donahue trotted them back. He had long hair combed back greaser fashion and pants tailored tight enough to show what looked like a bag of golf balls at the crotch. The maps were encased in limp plastic.
Richards didn't know what Donahue's balls were encased in. I didn't mean the mouth off, he said unwillingly.
Richards thought he could peg him. Well-off young men with a lot of free time often spent much of it roaming the shabby pleasure areas of the big cities, roaming in well-heeled packs, sometimes on foot, more often on choppers. They were queer stompers. Queers, of course, had to be eradicated. Save our bathrooms for democracy. They rarely ventured beyond the twilight pleasure areas until the full darkness of the ghettos. When they did, they got the shit kicked out of them.
Donahue shifted uneasily under Richard's long gaze.
Anything else?
You a queer stomper, pal?
Huh? Never mind. Go on back. Help them fly the plane.
Donahue went back at a fast shuffle. Richards quickly discovered that the map with the towns and cities and roads was the political map. Pressing one finger down from Derry to the Canada-Vermont border in a western reaching straight edge, he located their approximate position.
Captain Holloway?
Yes?
Turn left.
Huh?
Holloway sounded frankly startled.
South. I mean due south. And remember.
I'm remembering, Holloway said. Don't worry.
The plane banked. McCone sat hunched in the seat he had fallen into, staring at Richards with hungry, wanting eyes. -21, and counting. Richards found himself drifting in and out of a daze, and it frightened him. The steady drone of the engines were insidious, hypnotic. McCone was aware of what was happening, and his leaning posture became more and more vulpine. Amelia was also aware. She cringed miserably in a forward seat near the galley, watching them both. Richards drank two more cups of coffee. Not much help. It was becoming increasingly difficult to concentrate on the coordination of his map and Holloway's toneless commentary on their outlaw flight. Finally, he drove his fist into his side, where the bullet had taken him. The pain was immediate and intense, like a dash of cold water in the face. A whistling, half-whispered screech issued from either side of his clenched mouth, like stereo. Fresh blood wet his shirt and sieved through onto his hand. Amelia moaned.
We'll be passing over Albany in about 6 minutes, Holloway said. If you look out, you'll see it coming up on your left.
Relax, Richard said to no one. To himself.
Relax. Just relax. God, will it be over soon?
Yes. Quite soon. It was 7:45.